Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our 8th season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it. And it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor and privilege to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And I'm really excited and honored to be in community in conversation with my guest. Here with me today, Nathan Mansky is the founder and executive director of I'm From Driftwood, a nonprofit that has spent 17 years producing, publishing, and preserving first-person LGBTQIA+ stories. Its mission is to send a simple but life-saving message to queer and trans people everywhere. You are not alone. Mansky led a 50-state story collection tour, which is now archived in the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History, and the stories have reached over 50 million viewers worldwide. It's incredible. Nathan, hi.
Hi, Dubs. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well. I don't know when this will be published, but it's like the beginning of spring and all the snow is melted, still wearing a light jacket outside, but man, it's really nice. It's like one of my favorite times of the year.
Yeah, it's like, to me, it feels like almost like life-changing when it's like you can sit out in the sun and just like be outside and not freezing. It's so nice.
Yep.
So you were living in Texas, now you're on the East Coast again, and do you miss that like Texas warmth all year round, or is it like, okay, seasons are cool, or both?
A little of both, yeah, because the summers there really are, I am as unhappy in the Texas summers as I am in the Northeast winters. You know, it's very misleading. In Texas, you look outside and it's sunny and bright, and it's like, wow, it looks so nice out there. And you go outside and you're like, I cannot bear to be outside more than 5 minutes. And so it's, yeah, spring and fall are the best in both places.
For sure. I don't know if you know this or not, but my parents lived in Southern Texas for a chunk of time, in Harlingen in the Rio Grande Valley.
Way South Texas, yeah.
Yeah, well, super south. And man, was it hot. Oh gosh,
yeah,
it was so hot.
It's really hard to describe it and even to remember it, but and also it fluctuates much as like the Northeast winters do. You know, like some summers are worse than others, but a few years ago I was living in Austin and it was just a unbearably hot summer, and at the end of, or in the middle of that summer, I was like, if this is like this next year, I'm moving. I cannot enjoy life. I can't go outside. Like it felt like I just had to be inside all the time, and it was like, you know, like SAD, sad, like seasonal whatever depression.
Yeah,
I felt that, you know, and there were these articles written about how people in Texas were feeling depressed because you can't go outside. It's so hot. Yeah. And not every summer is like that. If you're considering moving to Austin or Texas, it's not always like that. You get a range, you know, just like in the Northeast, some winters are worse than others, but, yeah. Yeah. Summer's, not great usually, just as the winters are not great in the Northeast, but you deal with it in whatever way you can.
Yeah. I remember my dad would have to get up really early before the sun came up to walk the dogs because it was too hot for their puppy paws, their pads, or whatever you call them.
Yeah, it'll burn
Anytime
them.
during the day. Yeah. Well, climate change. But good that you're on the East Coast and have like maybe a little bit more moderate, temperate seasons, which is, you know,
Yeah. Well,
it's
it's funny.
nice.
No, I'm sorry to go on and on about the weather, but it's because it's spring and I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, of course.
My friends who, so I moved to Philadelphia, and all my friends and people who are like from here, they're like, wow, this is like the worst winter we've had in like 15 years. And I'm like, of course it is. Like the first winter I moved here happens to be the worst. So it was just, the testing my resolve if I really wanted to move to Philly or not. So, but I stuck it through, got new coats and, appropriate winter gear. And yeah, very, very happy to be in Philadelphia and closer to New York.
Yeah, that's amazing. So you and I met because when Thank You for Coming Out was the live show. Once a month, I think I did like a oh man, what did I call though? The fundraiser. And now I'm trying to remember. Well, I did a fundraiser for I'm From Driftwood, but I don't remember how exactly we got connected. Do you?
I think David Tomczak introduced us. Do you
Yes,
know
that's
David?
right. Yep.
David was an incredible board member and supporter, and just sort of one of those people who can do everything. And one of the things he did was he was a great connector, and he introduced us. He said that he knows someone. I think he was in the theater space as well, the theater world. And mentioned you and the show, and thought that we should connect. And yeah, so thanks, David. Here we are
Thanks, David.
because of him. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was it's amazing. I love the connecting and also I promise we'll get to your story in a second, but I love connecting and community. And there was the panel that I did with you at the Microsoft store, like I don't know, 6, 7 years ago at this point. I met this person named Ashley, who was there because her cousin worked at Microsoft, and we're still friends. We're like really good
Yeah.
friends, and we just like met at
Oh.
that event. And so it's just like, I don't know, I love that.
Yep. I love those also. We had an event once in the East Village, and these two people met there, and they last I heard, I haven't kept in touch with them, but that's they're like where they met story was this I'm From Driftwood event. And I'm like, yay.
That's amazing. I love
Bringing people
that.
together. Yeah.
Well, I could, go on about that, but I won't. So, because we do have a purpose, which we, for why we are here, which is we all have multiple coming out stories and coming into self stories. And so, I would be honored to hold space for you to share one of those stories with us here today.
Yeah, and it's funny you introduce it that way because it's sort of one it multiple coming out stories all intertwined together to be one. I was living in Driftwood at the time. I was probably 19, probably 18 years old. And I just got to the point where at this point I knew that I was gay. I think maybe I had a boyfriend at this time, my first boyfriend, but closeted. No one knew except him, obviously. And I just was like very depressed, and I just was sitting at my desk in my bedroom at home. I have three brothers, two were still living at home, and my mom was there. And I was just in my room by myself, and I was like, something has to change. I cannot continue living my life like this. So what is it? And it was something like it felt like my brain just like leveled up and became more mature, started like thinking about things differently. I was also, 18, so that probably was happening also to my brain. And I was just like, okay, what are my options here? And this part of this will sound more dramatic and hopefully not too traumatizing, but I was like, well, one is I just continue my life the way it is and nothing changes. Like that is a possibility. Another like actual possibility is that I end my life and I just end it. And I wasn't like I didn't feel suicidal. It was just like well, sure, it's an option. That's where my brain was. The third option is that I can come out and change my life. And I was like, those are the options. That's it. It's like one of these three options. There's no other option here. Immediately took ending my life off the table. Like I mentioned, I just was not suicidal. And as I can continue living my life as it is. But that is literally what led me to this point. I don't want to. So I took that off the table. And it didn't even feel like a choice. It felt like I have no other option. This is the only one left on the table in front of me. I have to do this. And it wasn't like this brave, like, I decided this was my, I was just like, there's literally no other option for me to do this. And I was like, I'm gonna do it. And I'm going to come out. And I didn't like run downstairs and I was like, I'm gay. But I knew that I was like, okay, this is going to happen soon, like whenever, and it just felt very, I think the fact that I made it so matter of fact and that I could just hone it in, it's like, there is no other option. It was very analytical. Almost as if I made this decision like on a spreadsheet. I was like, the formula says that this is it, like I this is it. And sure enough, like after that, I started the process of coming out, and I introduced my boyfriend as my friend, to family and friends. And my brother asked me point blank at dinner one time. He's like, "Do you think Kevin was my boyfriend? Do you think Kevin's gay?" And I was like, in my head, I'm like laughing. I'm like, "Yep," but in my, I was like, "Yeah, I think maybe," And my brother was like, even if you're gay, like that, it's no big deal, And I was like, no, I'm not, So I was like, ah, I hesitated there on the drive home. I was like, oh, that was it. Like, that was the moment I could have said it. And when I got home, I sent him an email, and I was like, actually, I am gay. And so that was he was the first person I came out to, my oldest brother. 6 months later, I was in that same room. My bedroom, living at home, and I was similar, like motivation, and like I gotta do this. It's time. Just called my mom up to my room. I was like, "Hey, can you come up here?" And which is kind of weird. Like I would never do that. So right when she walked in, she's like, "Well, did you clean? Like, what is it? Like, something must be weird. Like, did you clean?" Which would have been weird. And I said, no, I just wanted to talk. And when I said that, I was like, there's no turning back now. And she's like, oh, of course. Like, what do you want to, what's going on? And I said, I'm gay. And I just broke down in tears. And she's like, oh, thank God you're not pregnant. And and she's like, that's totally fine. We don't care. I love you. Thank you for telling me, I'm so sorry this has been, and a wonderful conversation followed. She got pregnant when she was 18 and had to tell her parents. So I think that she was relating to that experience. So, and then like 6 months later, my oldest brother that I came out to first was living with my dad and stepmom, all around the Austin area. Driftwood is near Austin. And my dad was living, with my stepmom in Lakeway, which is also, outside of Austin. And so my oldest brother was living with them, I was at this point I was living in Austin with my another boyfriend. So I was moving around a lot, and I was making a bedroom look like it was mine, because my dad was coming over the next day, so I was making it look, but really I obviously was just sharing my bedroom with my boyfriend, and as I was like making my room look lived in, I was like kind of saw myself as an outside, as like outside looking in, and I was like, this is so stupid. I'm like designing a stage. I'm doing set design to make it look like my bedroom, as if I'm draping a shirt over the chair to make it look like it's just a messy room. And I just realized how stupid this was. And I was like, this is so stupid. So I called my brother and I said, Nick, I need you to tell dad that I'm gay. He was like, what? Like, oh my God. Okay, whatever you need. But like, oh my God, this is the closest I'll ever understand what it's like to come out. It's like, will you do this? And he's like, yes, I will. Okay. And 30 minutes later, it felt like forever. My dad called and said that, we love you, and it's all good. Yeah, I have no like traumatic coming out story. It was all very, I was very fortunate. My dad wished that I had told them sooner, which is also a good thing, but yeah, that's it. It was, but it can all be traced back to that moment where something, and I think something triggered in my mind of just looking at this as a very factual, non-emotional thing. I was like, okay, what are my options? Ran through them. only one was left, then that's time to execute. I don't like I don't know where that 18-year-old got that the perspective, I don't know what I don't even know what to call that. But sometimes now, as I'm older, I will still get in that mindset, and I will think of that. I'm like, oh, this now reminds me of that time when I, changed my life by using this strategy. And so yeah, I that was my very analytical trigger of coming out.
Well, first, thank you for sharing. I get a lot of people, like when they're where I'm asking them to like share their stories, they're like, but my story wasn't traumatic, or my story, wasn't funny when it wasn't when it was a comedy show. And it's always just like we all, stories don't have to have trauma to be worthwhile. And I also just want to say that when I giggled about the I'm glad you're not pregnant, I wasn't trying to like minimize it. It just was like a silly, but like I hope that wasn't like
Oh, no, it's
I wasn't
funny.
trying to be
Yeah.
rude. Okay, good.
No, it's
I didn't
funny.
realize it
Yeah.
was based on your mom's experience, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, but also we my family very often uses humor as a mechanism of lightening, and then getting real. So it was very on brand, and meant to be. She could tell that I was struggling, and she wanted to use humor as a way to that's very how our family does. So yeah, it did not feel like you were minimizing it. Yeah.
Okay, good. That's yeah, humor, man, let me tell you. It's quite the tool.
It is, and something funny that you are not funny, that you mentioned about trauma and I have a concern sometimes that people hear positive coming out stories or any experience regarding being queer or trans, and it's like, oh, you didn't have everything was supportive, like everything is fine, it was easy, like the world is better now. And it's like, I didn't have any external trauma. The fact that I this 18-year-old kid puts like ending my own life on the table, like that is like a societal trauma, and it's not always interpersonal. It's it and this is I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but like the importance of representation. And for me, I had no I grew up on a ranch. Like Driftwood is a massive land. It's not even there's no mayor, there's no government. It's a it's a place that is what's the word? It's not annexed, but like the town next to it, Dripping Springs, like governs it. So it's like a it very small is what I'm saying. So I had no exposure. We didn't have cable TV. This was before the internet, or as the internet was starting. I had nothing. So it's I know my experience, and I'm all good. But to I wish people would understand that just because someone doesn't have a negative, like, oh, you've never been, like, the F word's never been thrown at you on the street, beat up or anything for being, it's everything is fine. It's like, no, like, it's the internalization of, what you hear, like, on TV or read, or, all these bills, like, government is such a massive part of how people internalize things. And, so I guess I just wanted to add that I'm so lucky, like, that having a supportive family is the game changer for queer and trans people. But that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of responsibility that society has to take on to make sure that an 18-year-old or a kid is not putting ending their life as a viable option on the table.
Amen to that. I mean, you said it perfectly. I'm just thinking of like, yeah, I don't need to re-say it, but I was thinking the same things you were saying around, the internal struggle, and like the negotiating we have to do to be like, is this safe to come out? Is this safe? Like, is it safe to talk about? Am I safe to go to Texas? Am I safe to go to Florida? Am I safe to be in Ohio with my parents? And so there's a lot of, and like you're saying too about the government of like that, the constant attacks is like it's like very wearing, very, very wearing. So
Ch
having,
chips away to hear about this constantly. It's like, oh, now there's this bill, and now there's this, and it just keeps changing, and it's just like every election cycle, there's a new scapegoat, or or multiple election cycles. It's yeah, it's exhausting, and just constantly hearing that, it's a constant whisper. It's like, and that wears you down, and so.
I'm thinking like when I teach about microaggressions, I like the metaphor I give is like, like one mosquito bite, it's probably not going to ruin your day, but when you constantly are getting bit by mosquitoes, it's unbearable. And I think similarly with what you're saying, like these little whispers or these little like mosquito bites of like constantly every day for years, it's a lot. And so having supportive family members and other positive representation and community is so important. I was have you ever watched The Sopranos?
No, I haven't. I'm like one of the like probably 10 people who have not seen it.
Well, I only just watched it. So but there's in one of the later seasons there is a gay character and the, this was in the early 2000s and the way that he's treated is so absolutely horribly terrible that it's like no wonder people are afraid to come out because if that like or because we're met with violence it, like what would be it's just it's tough out there. So the positivity wherever we can find it is so important. And so like how old were you? And I'm curious if you had like a Ring of Keys moment or how old were you like when you were like, oh, I'm maybe different than the people in my family or how I think I should be.
Yeah, there was a I'm kind of a really big X-Men nerd and or geek. And so I was obsessed with X-Men as a teenager and until today, this very moment. But I got turned onto it in the 90s with the cartoon and or the animated series and then the comics, and I just was like, it was my obsession. And there was this issue of Uncanny X-Men, and Professor X is like giving this big speech in Central Park, and he's comparing the mutant struggle to other minorities throughout history, and he's talking about regardless of your race or whatever and your gender and or is the 90s, he probably didn't even say gender, but he said even if you're a homosexual. And I just remember like looking at the word, and I was like, and then like Professor X, like this amazing like heroic figure, wise figure, this superhero, and he said, and looking back now, I'm like, oh, the word homosexual, like, but at the time, I was like, Professor X sees me, like it took a fictional character to say this clinical, now sort of like frowned upon word, but I was like, it so many steps that it took for me to feel seen and not alone was because the word homosexual was printed and in this comic with a little story bubble going to Professor X. That I was like, and I wasn't even out. I wasn't even acknowledging that I was gay. But it was like this, like was a seed. It was like, we're gonna remember this later. This means something to you. We're not ready to address it. But that means something. And yeah, so like X-Men really was my the way that I felt that it's okay to be different. And like the analogy even is like I'm a mutant, like these weird things, like even that, it's like you're weird and different. It's like, hey, being called weird and different is okay as long as I'm not the only one. And as long as there's a community around it. And so I that to me was really that one word and that whole comic book and like or hundreds of comics that I read and all that, like everything. I just remember seeing that one word. And an interesting thing is that probably 20 years after that, when I was getting stories for I from Driftwood, we got a story. His name is Don Bell. He lives in Chicago. And his story was about he was a teenager and he was in the library at school and he went and got the dictionary and just flipped to the word homosexual because he just wanted to be like, I just want to, people call me gay or whatever. And I just like, what, I think they're right. I think I am. I just need to see it, you know? And he flipped to the word homosexual in the dictionary and he read it and he just felt like, this is me. And like a dictionary, a word in a dictionary is helping like queer kids feel special. Like the driest, most basic minimum, like what's the fewest words we can use to fully describe a thing that is helping people just by knowing, like defining it and by seeing it. And then the really beautiful moment of his story was he said that the word, the ink had been smudged a tiny little bit. And because he pointed to it and touched it. And that's when he realized he was like, oh, I'm not the only one who's been doing this. And that was like, there's other gay people out here who are looking for the word homosexual in the dictionary and touching it as a way of like ugh, it's me. It's like connecting. And it's like beautiful. So it of course reminded me of that moment with me as a teenager, like looking, just looking, staring at this word homosexual coming from Professor X, and just how that's how starved people are for knowing that they're not alone. A single word in a comic book, and my God, a word in a dictionary. Like
Wow.
how fulfilling and how like nourishing a word is from a dictionary. That should say a whole lot.
Wow, it really does say a lot. That's it's also reminding me of have you seen Oh Mary?
No, I haven't seen it. I see all their ads on Instagram.
You should definitely come see it. But they one of Mary's favorite books is The Dictionary.
Oh.
But it's part of a bit. So anyways, but it just reminded me of that. But yeah, I mean I remember just craving seeing anything queer when I was a kid. Of like well, I watched Boys Don't Cry, and that was super hard to watch and like very similar to like planted a seed and was like, I am not ready to deal with this. And I don't know that I'm ever going to want to deal with this because this is scary and terrifying and terrible. But I think then, you know, seeing just like the little moment on Ellen or seeing, you know, and then when the L word came out, and there's just like these like moments of, just like queer representation was amazing. And I also was just still starving for like accurate trans representation. And kind of still am.
Bless you.
Thank you. So you've mentioned, we both have mentioned, I'm from Driftwood a few times, but I would love for you to just like in your own words, like tell us what I'm from Driftwood is. It's been around for 17 years, which is incredible. Tell us everything about it.
Yeah, so I was inspired to create it after watching the film Milk in 2008. Milk is a film starring Sean Penn and written by Dustin Lance Black. And it's about Harvey Milk, who was the first openly gay elected official in California. He was a supervisor in San Francisco. And the film is about him. He was assassinated, I believe, in 70. I don't want to get the history wrong, in the late 70s. And there is a photo, a famous photograph of Harvey Milk. He's in the San Francisco Pride March, And he's sitting on the hood of a car. He's holding up a big sign that reads, "I'm from Woodmere, New York." And the morning after watching the film, I was thinking about that photograph for some reason. It was just in my head. And then it hit me that like everyone associates Harvey Milk with San Francisco, this big queer and trans mecca, but he's not from there. He's from this town that like most people have never heard of. And it sounds like a small name, sounds like just like a town that we're all from. And I was living in New York at the time. And even though I'm in New York City, I'm not from there. I'm from this town called Driftwood, Texas. And to me, it meant that that photograph of Harvey Milk, it meant that you're not alone, no matter where you are. Even if you're in Woodmere, even if you're in Driftwood, we're not only in New York City and San Francisco, we are everywhere. And I wanted to give that message out there to everyone that you're not alone. And I wanted to do that through storytelling. So that was the beginning of it. It was like everything kind of came together that one morning. Thinking about that photograph of Harvey Milk. I didn't have the name yet. I didn't understand like how exactly to collect stories, but I was like, you're not alone through storytelling. And that was it. And as my personal story goes, I went to University of Texas in Austin, got an advertising degree, moved to New York, was building my career there. I saw Milk on a Wednesday. I thought of the idea of collecting stories with that message if you're not alone Thursday morning. And then on Friday, I went into my job and I was laid off. So it was like 3 days was just a completely life-changing, in hindsight. I didn't really know it at the time, but the just monumental life-changing 3 day period. So I suddenly, I went to school for this, for advertising. I was building my career. It was scary. I was like, I'm like letting this go and to focus on this complete unknown thing. But I had just this renewed sense of purpose and, just, it was all I thought about. It was just like all I worked on. I was so excited about it. All my friends like rallied around. I told everyone about it. Friends rallied around and like helped me, build it. They did the first stories on the website. And it just kind of like took off. And yeah, that was 17 years ago. And we started with written stories. And then soon after launching, one of my best friends, Marquise, he had the idea of doing these video stories. And he said, "Hey," he lived in Philly, still lives in Philly, we hang out all the time. He was like, "Let me come to New York and let's film a few of these stories as a pilot, And I said, "Okay," and we did. And ever since we've, we gradually were shifting towards video only, and now we are exclusively video stories. And all the stories are their narrative story arcs. So there's we provide one-on-one storytelling coaching with all of our storytellers. So we make sure that there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end, there's a moment of change, so all these like classic traditional storytelling elements. And we help people tell like vivid scenes, like was this taking place like on a sidewalk or were you at a cafe? Were you, like were in a park? What did they say? How did that make you feel? All these things to help tell a story, because it's pretty natural for humans to be able to tell a story. We all do it very like naturally, but to tell a full narrative arc, you need a little guidance to do that. So that's what we do. And yeah, we film them. They tell me their story, and we have somebody film it and then edit it. Damien is my colleague. He does all the filming and editing now, and most of the coaching as well. He's our program director, and he will edit them, and then we publish them online, on YouTube, on our website, and on Instagram. So that's what that's the long and the short of it.
Okay, that's incredible. And I was lucky to get to tell a story. I mean, probably like 10 years ago or 9 years ago. It's been a minute. So how many stories do you have? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, we have not exactly. We have over 1,000 stories total, but that includes written stories. So, video stories, we probably have close to 800.
That's amazing.
So,
And
yeah.
so you have the stories are in the Smithsonian. So do you just like give them the stories as they are coming out? And is that collection also growing as your story bank grows?
I wish we asked them to do that, and they surprisingly this or maybe not surprisingly the Smithsonian is a bit of a dinosaur because they've been around for so long, they have so much, so they were a little behind on archiving digital stuff. So when I say that we are archived to the Smithsonian's American History Museum, the specifically it's the 50 state story tour that we did back in 2010. We went to all 50 states within 4 months, collected at least one story from every state. It was this incredible once in a lifetime, unless we get a whole lot of funding to do it differently and better this time, once in a lifetime experience. And it's like, was it like the American road trip, but like collecting stories, very like humanities and who we are at that moment in time. Really, just a great experience. We sat with an oral historian and went through day by day. Several years after we finished, we did this, went day by day, talked about where we went, who we spoke to, our experiences, had all that transcribed, printed everything, pulled all of our photos. Transcribed all the video stories and put together like a collection to donate to the Smithsonian. So the 50 State Story Tour is archived at the Smithsonian. And it was a one-time donation. So everything there is complete. And they did say that we haven't done this yet, but they said that now that they are starting some digital archiving, that we could send them the digital footage of anything related to the story tour. And I took this sort of as a compliment. I asked them if they wanted to archive our entire library of stories and footage, and they said it would be the biggest project they would have taken on ever, like in their digital history. So they couldn't do that. And I was like, okay, but that's bragging rights also. Being
For
told
sure.
no for that reason is like, okay, all right. We actually are. I'm glad you brought that up because we are doing our best to preserve all this footage. But we are an acting archive, I guess. Like we tag everything. Everything is transcribed. There's metadata. There's tags. So if you want to find stories from Ohio, you just click Ohio, pulls up all the stories. If you want stories that touch on immigration, you can do that. Stories, if you want stories from like queer people or who identify as queer or lesbians or trans, whatever, you can. So it's all very archival in that respect. But everything we have is backed up on Dropbox, which is a third party, so we need to we want to create our own server that we have that is ours and not cloud-based. It's just like, here's our safe. That if we don't pay our membership dues, that they won't shut us off. So
Yeah.
that is something, but it's also there's just two of us. We're both already overworked, and doing the archival work is like that's people's careers. Like people do that as a job. So we need help. We need help doing that. Becoming an official archive, especially now that we've been around for 17 years. Like the longer we're around, the more of a historical archive we're becoming. We have stories from before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. We have stories before marriage equality. So we're kind of documenting the queer and trans experience as time goes on, like in the moment. So I didn't start this. It's a for a historical reason, but the longer we're around, the more that's becoming apparent of how cool it is, like as a secondary benefit to what we do.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's just absolutely incredible. And ha having over 50 million views is so spectacular. Because just think about the impact you're having. 50 million. That's amazing. Have you watched every story?
Oh yeah, for sure. M multiple times because we there's a whole process of we film them in person, and then Damien does the first draft of the story, sends it to me, and I'll suggest some tweaks or whatever, and then I'll make the changes, I'll watch them again, and then from the typically one story is about 4 to 6 minutes, and that is what we put on our website and upload on YouTube. From that 4 to 6 minute video story, Damien then creates a 60 to 90 second mini story that is better suited for Instagram and TikTok and like shorter format platforms. And then from there, he'll create like smaller, like, clips, so it's not like a narrative arc. It's more about like the highlights from the story. Again, for more content to get the word out there. So yes, I definitely watched the story at least once. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know you shared the story of the dictionary, which I just think is so wild, important, and just such an incredible example of literally touching and connecting with a word. Is there another story that kind of has stuck with you throughout all the years?
Yeah, it changes over time. And right now, it was a story we collected on the 50 State Story Tour. And it recently became our, and this is why it's back in my mind. Damien made a mini story out of it. So it's about 90 seconds and it's on our Instagram page, and it has over 1 million views, that one video. And it just really took off. And if you watch it, it's kind of like no surprise because it's such a beautiful story. It's from someone named Novale, and we filmed it in Hawaii. He is a native Hawaiian and has like this long hair and like a lot of jewelry and this very soft voice. And his story was about being bullied as a child, and he got home and was upset and told his grandpa, and his grandpa or his grandpa was like, what's wrong? Like, what's you seem so upset. And it's like, these kids at school, like, they're bullying, they hate me, like, they say I'm weird or whatever. And his grandpa like really got his attention and said, listen, if you only remember one thing I ever tell you, I want you to remember this, that because of who you are, there will be enough people who love you for exactly who you are that you never have to worry about the ones that don't. And he said that ever since that moment, he would always think about that advice. And even to that day, if somebody says something stupid or homophobic, it's like, I don't, you were not. Now I'm like paraphrasing for him. So he did not say this, but like my takeaway is that it's like, okay, that's you, that's your problem. I know my loved ones. I'm loved by so many people. It doesn't matter what you think, So it's just a really beautiful story that touched on bullying, but also like the just that perspective of moving through that and navigating the world and understanding that you will meet people who don't like you and what you do with that, So it was a and unfortunately Novale passed away about 7 or 8 years ago, and we didn't know, like, but his granddaughter commented on the story and was like, oh my God, that's my, I'm sorry, not granddaughter, niece. It's like, that was my uncle. Like, we miss him so much, but it's like, what a surprise to see this, like, trending on, going viral on Instagram. And it's like, ah, like all these like things that you don't expect, all these like side effects and impacts, like side impacts that you can't prepare for, it's just really rewarding to see how these stories affect so many people in different ways.
Ugh, I love that. That's amazing. Like, as you were saying, telling that story, I was just thinking of like other people's opinions don't fit into the calculation that we have to, like, even though it feels like outside pressure and outside opinions, like do impact us, but also no, like you don't get to make me feel this way. Like only I get to decide how I feel. So it's, I
Yep.
like that. So how can people like get involved with I'm From Driftwood? Like, are there volunteer opportunities? How like are you taking like story submissions? Like, how do we support you in all the different ways?
Yeah, I mean, right now, unfortunately, we are on a little bit of a news story hiatus. We're for the most part, we used to publish every week, which was absurd. But now we're doing one a month, and we already have our monthly stories for the rest of the year, which is great. But we made a decision a couple years ago to stop focusing as much on new content and shift the focus to re-editing the library of stories that we already have, and re-edit them for new audiences. We're sitting on this like massive like mound of stories that a lot of people have never seen. So, and after we did that, we realized it was the right decision. So once I think once we get more funding, then we'll increase the new stories and also edit the older ones for Instagram and TikTok. So really, if you want to help in a really easy way, is like follow us on Instagram. And I say that not as a cheesy way of like we want more followers, but like go find some stories and clips that you like. Like you'll find some. They're incredible. You'll be surprised that Damien's like a wizard at editing down a 6 minute video story to like 90 seconds. And because our concern was like, how do you get this whole narrative arc in a minute and a half or 2 minute Instagram reel? And he it was at his insistence. He was like, just let me try and show you. And sure enough, so go browse some stories and follow us. We upload new content almost every day. Yeah, give us a follow. And also if you know I mean, if you know anyone who wants to work with us, we work with schools, with corporations. We'll get stories from companies. We've worked with airlines, law firms, like telecommunication companies, anyone at all. Like if you have an ERG at your company, I know that DEI is under attack right now, but some companies are like pushing back by doing more. If you can help us, like raise money, get grants, like, yeah, like there's any way that if anyone listening is able to help a small nonprofit, there's so many ways to help us. But yeah, really just like we want to share these stories with people. That's our whole mission. So go check them out on Instagram, YouTube. We're trying to get our TikTok channel up and running soon. Yeah, or just reach out.
Yeah, amazing. And I'll make sure to tag all y'all and put the links and such. Well, question for you. When you go into like companies or schools, like do you like solicit their stories and give them back to them? Or if you're not soliciting new stories for your website, for your like so like what's the takeaway or what have you?
Yeah, so we good. Yeah, good question. Because if we have a partnership with a company, then we will get new stories. But the way that we work with them, let's say, I don't know, what's a random company that is not anti-LGBT right now.
Costco.
Let's Costco. Great. Let's say we work with Costco, and they want us to get usually it's three stories because that's like the magic. And any more than that, like it's just too much. So we will get three stories from, or we'll get stories from three storytellers who work at Costco. Usually, what we would do is we would find one from like all different parts of the company. Somebody who works like the register, an executive, and someone in like accounting. like we like because that's the whole point of Driftwood is is everyone. Everyone is queer and trans people are everywhere. So we would produce those stories. We also are very upfront about this is not going to be like it's so great to be openly queer working at Costco because like Costco is probably never going to be mentioned in a story. This is not like a PR video. It's not a branding video. These are personal stories from their employees. And that in working in this way, like we've shared stories about overcoming substance abuse, but it was for at an airline. And they're like, what does this have to do? And it's like, but they were proud. They're like, no, we want to do this because we want our employees to know that we care about like who they are. Like everyone says, like, bring your full self to work. This is a way to stand behind that. So if anyone wants to work with us, we're not making PR videos. It's like personal stories from your employees. And then I will come in. We will share those on our website. So we will get new stories if it's funded, so that's the reason we stopped. It's just like, it's expensive and takes so much work. So if we have funding from a company, we will get new stories from their employees. And then I will come in and do a presentation where I'll screen the stories that we filmed or their colleagues. And then there was a Q&A panel discussion with the storytellers there. So, and that's one way that we can work with people. Another way is like if they don't want stories, new stories produced of their employees, then I can just come in and use existing stories in the archive. And I love this part of it, but it's kind of nerdy. I talk about mirror neurons, like the neurological impact of storytelling. So when you tell a story, you're activating these mirror neurons in the listener's brain, and that is the basis of empathy. So that's that feeling you get of like, oh, get you, I feel you, even though it never really happened to me, but on a microscopic level, it did. So that's why we put so much effort into that narrative arc and vivid scenes, because that triggers those neurons. So I'll talk about that, and it's like some fun educational stuff and share stories and have a good discussion. So yeah, a whole range, like that's kind of the range. I can come in and speak for 30 minutes, or we can do like the deluxe, premium version of like getting stories and a moderated panel discussion.
Yeah, that's amazing. So cool. Man, I hate to do this, but we have reached the end, and so I need to pivot us into our lightning round of questions,
All right.
that are meant to be lighthearted and fun, but I was given feedback a few years ago that my questions were too binary, so I've switched them to open-ended, which might make it slightly more challenging to answer, but you can pass. It's all just still for fun. Are you ready?
Ready. I'm scared,
Okay.
but I'm ready.
No, you're gonna do great. No wrong answers. Where's your favorite place to think?
Walking on the street. The sidewalk.
Who is an influential queer person in your life?
My friends, my close group of friends. Like sorry, it's supposed to be lightning round. I moved to Philadelphia to be closer to my friends because of they're all influential in many ways. So yeah, I have to be safe and not mention only one. So my friends. That's such a boring answer, but my friends.
No, I think it's really sweet. What's a song that you can listen on repeat to forever?
Oh God. I went on a really big Rufus Du Sol. Like I just he's all I would listen to for like a long time. So I'm just gonna say any of Rufus Du Sol's like top five songs. Yeah.
Okay, good to know. What's one thing you want to be known for?
I'm tempted just to say I'm from Driftwood, but that's kind of cheating. So I want to say like being real, like something I really my aunt passed away about 3 years ago, and at her service, everyone just or I talked about and other people did too about how anytime you got to sit next to her or only had a few minutes or like it's Christmas, everyone's around, but you have like 2 minutes with her. She just cut through all the noise and would ask a real question. And it's like, oh, it's not like, how's it going? But it's like, she just asked a real question. So I aspire to be like that in group settings and one-on-one. So yeah, I would like to be known for that, to ask engaging questions and to be real.
I love that. That's so sweet. feel like I keep saying how sweet things are, but you're saying sweet
Oh,
things. Okay, think of a concert you'd love to go to. Artist, dead or alive, who would it be?
wow, dead or alive. Okay. Oh man, this is, I've already been, but so I would like to go again only because it was so surprising to me. Like I went to a Miley Cyrus concert at a festival. So she was like, it was like 60 minutes, like start and she's done. And I was like, yeah, I know Miley, whatever. I just went for like the fun. And I was so surprised at how much I loved it. And I think for that reason, I love other artists that I would, oh, I know that I will love it, you know? It's like, cool. But I was so surprised at how much I loved her show, that I would want to see it again.
That's amazing. I love that. There's a part two to the question, which is during that particular set, which song would you go to the bathroom?
Oh, any of her like earlier stuff. I only like the past 5 years, like several years, like more like rock and roll Miley. Yeah. So any time I heard some like earlier stuff, I'd be like, cool, I'll be back.
Like Party in the USA, you're like
Oh no. Well, see, that's a good
pishy in the
example. Yes, something like that, but like not that one because you
USA.
know the crowd's gonna go crazy. And like part of going to a show is like the energy of the crowd. So you know the gays are gonna like eat that one up. So no, definitely not that one. But that vibe, yeah.
Got it. The like the uphill climb one.
Sure. Yeah.
Great.
Like
Okay.
yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember what it is, but okay. Where do you find the most joy?
Like currently on my couch because I found that the reason I stayed in Philly full time is because I found this really cute like little apartment, and if I lay on my couch and look out my window, I see like the skyline of Philadelphia, and I'm just like relaxing, and it just is so peaceful. And there's this really pretty tree out my window, and it's very like this urban city that I have learned about myself that is important to me, and I love, and like the just I just like can sit there, and sometimes I like read, and I'm so happy and comfortable that I will be distracted from reading because I just will look out the window and I'm like, ah, I can't believe I live here. And like knowing that all my friends are here and like being on my couch in that window distracts me from of like how happy I am. Like my happiness on my couch for where I am in life is distracting. So I would have to say, yeah, like on my couch, but for all those reasons.
I love that. That's amazing. Dare I say, so sweet. Okay. Last question. One binary question I could not get rid of, which is bagels or donuts?
Bagels.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
there are no right or wrong answers, but that's the right answer.
Well, I feel like you can do more. Like donuts are so delicious, but bagels are, you can do more with them. Like what kind of bagel and then what is cream cheese or yeah, there's more. And I have bagels for breakfast and I love like the start to a day. I like having a whole day ahead of me. And so bagels remind me of like starting a day.
I love that. Yeah, bagels are my love. Nathan, this has been so lovely. It was so nice to see you and catch up with you. Thank you so much for sharing and thank you for coming out.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
Thank you for coming in.